can you hear me all right?
So I am part of a fantastic team back at the health department, and today I'm simply the voice of the team. We are in the midst of a work in progress, so we've taken a snapshot of this work, and I'm going to tell you the story of what we learned for 1 year of suicide, 2007. I have no financial relationships to disclose, but at this juncture, I do want to note that the topic we're going to address today is a sensitive one, obviously. There are tragic tales behind the data I present, and I want to acknowledge that when I present it, I may sound detached. That's partly a coping device, but it's also what happens when you're in the epidemiology of it all. So I want to acknowledge the loss that is the undercurrent of this presentation, and if anyone has any issue and needs to tend to themselves, just do so, okay? Alrighty, so what are we gonna sort of sprint through today? I wanna tell you a bit about why we set out to do the project we're doing. I wanna talk about the methods we use to do it, because from an epidemiologic perspective, the methods become part of your legitimate foundation for promulgating the findings and having people really listen to you. So our methods are rigorous and important to quickly review. I'll tell you what we've seen so far, and my intent there is to highlight findings that are not conventionally available in data sources on suicide. So I'm going to unpack some decedent incident characteristics that you may not commonly read about, tell you about the high-ranking methods of suicide, but in detail that is A, a bit sensitive, and B, uncommonly disclosed in data circles, and try to parse out the distinguishing features of the methods of the subsets of suicides. Our hypothesis is there are some distinguishing characteristics of suicide by firearms, of suicide by hanging, and we want to use those characteristics to drive prevention strategies. So embedded in my data slides, I actually have shared with you, forthcoming, our brainstorming around prevention. Our data do no good if they just stay in data cells and we just stare at them. So I force some discussion of prevention in the data talk. I think we all understand what suicide is, but by definition, it is a fatality that results from an intentional self-inflicted injury with the deliberate intent to harm self and, in worst case scenario, kill oneself. Lots of redundancies in that definition, but it's important that we all get clarity on the deliberate intent behind it. When you set out to do active surveillance, you want to have a very tight grip on the established risk factors for the problem, because you want to try to capture them as best you can in the data surveillance work. So we organized our thinking at two levels. At the individual level, we're particularly curious about the psychiatric history of the decedents in New York City, as well as the chronic, possibly terminal disease history, with the literature indicating that both of those histories may increase risk to harm self. In addition, and this is very important from a public health perspective, environmental factors contribute to suicide risk, but the environment is modifiable. So we've loosely examined literature on that you could organize this way, on social isolation, on access to treatment, and access to firearms, the weapons, the means used to kill self. So why did we set out to do what we did? Well, there are two essential reasons, and they're rooted in epidemiologic fact. Fact number one, for a long time, even more so than this graph shows, suicide in New York City has held steady. Now, from one perspective, that's not bad. But from a different perspective, that is bad. It means it's not going anywhere. It's a steady state, and we've set ourselves up with a goal to reduce suicide by 5%. When Jared mentioned our Take Care New York Health Initiative, we've committed to a 5% reduction in suicide because stasis is not tolerable. Now, of note in this slide is, while we've held steady, we are at half the suicide rate of the national average. And this slide tends to spark numerous questions, so I'm going to try to preempt one of them. In large measure, that's because of the means used in New York City to kill self. Firearms are not the highest ranking method, which you will see in a moment. What's driving the national numbers is firearms. Does that make sense? The second reason, and this is a bit esoteric, but when you're swimming in the data, it's pretty clear. So you can take administrative data sets on all deaths, and we have immediate access to that at the health department. And using a standardized coding scheme, you can organize the data by the mechanism that brought about the suicide. And since the data have been so steady over the years, we do something to really stabilize the numbers. We pool them, and then we rank according to these codes. They're called the International Classification of Disease Codes. We rank the methods that are bringing about these deaths. And so in New York City, this is important orientation, hanging ranks number one, jumping from a high place number two, firearms are in there number three, poisoning, drugs, medicinal substances, number four, et cetera. But let me show you two things here. When you're looking at these data and you're thinking data into action, there are two particular categories that leave you wanting more information. Jumping from a high place. The code in this grand codification scheme does not tell you whether the decedent jumped from a building or a bridge. Similarly, the jumping before a moving object is not enough detail for us if you want to move to prevention fast. We don't know if that moving object is a car, a train, a bus, and particularly of note in New York City, is it a subway? These codes don't tell us that. So from a surveillance perspective, you say to yourself, well, where can I get more information? Very easy at the health department to go get more information. So we take this backdrop, which is rich but limited, and we go in pursuit of more information. And why are we doing that again? Because we want to get inventive and get inventive fast with prevention approaches. So from a methodological perspective, it's very direct what we do. We go to our vital statistics office and we request a list of all suicide deaths as per that codification scheme. So they deliver a list to us with the confirmation that the cause of death was indeed suicide and some data on the mechanism that was used. And they also give us the medical examiner record number. All unnatural deaths in New York City are subject to medical examiner review. All unnatural deaths include accidents of a great variety, motor vehicle to falling in your home, homicide, and suicide. So at the medical examiner's office, we have access to the story of all suicide deaths in New York City. And that story is told through multiple parts of the file. May include police reports, scene investigations, family interviews, supplemental case interviews, which the interview process extends beyond the family, scene photographs, where you can learn things like whether there was a note at the scene or whether there were pill bottles around the decedent. So it's a rich, somewhat graphic story of the incident. Do we learn all we need to know about the decedent's history? No, but you learn information relevant to the incident. How do we get at that information? Well, we use a structured abstraction form that is 10 pages long, and we have a standardized approach to doing this kind of surveillance. We actually do it with many kinds of injuries, and we model our work off of the National Violent Death Reporting System, which is a codified way to enrich the description of violent death, sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control. And so when we're in the record with this structured instrument, we are in deliberate pursuit of what you usually get in epidemiologic investigations, person's age, where they live, their gender, date and time of death. But we're also interested in, is there any indication of a psychiatric history? What about the toxicology report? What's that revealing? We also learn more info on the method used. This is where we can understand, was it a building or was it a bridge that the decedent jumped from? And if it was a bridge, which one? In other words, we're curious, if do we have a Golden Gate Bridge phenomenon in New York City? So we dig for that information, as well as learning a bit more about the actual incident. Were there any witnesses? Was there a note at the scene? And we're in pursuit of that because that is part of our prevention thinking. Quick story of what we saw. This is your basic story. Just for grounding, I wanted to let you know there were 477 cases in 2007. That corresponds to the rate we would expect. It's about 5.5 deaths per 100,000 in New York City. This is a problem, as you all know, that is largely driven by men killing themselves. In New York City, it's about a 70-30 split. The age group at greatest risk in New York City is 55 to 64-year-olds, not too different from other jurisdictions. And the race-ethnicity group at greatest risk in New York City is whites. Interesting phenomenon we have. The medical examiner is investigating all cases that occur in New York City. So this means it's potentially the case that we have some deaths in New York from people that live outside the city. And it varies a bit from year to year as we've expanded our investigation, but it's close to 10% each year where the deaths are occurring among non-residents. There is a bit of a suicide tourism hypothesis circulating among us in New York City. And so we're as interested in that 10% as we are in our own. We can also look at the borough of residents and understand if we need to target some of our prevention. Manhattan residents have the highest suicide rate. And because of the diversity in New York City, we also want to learn a bit more about the country of origin of the decedents. And in large measure, the risk is equal. 41% of our decedents were not born in New York City, not born in the U.S., rather. So it is an interesting context for these suicides. So here comes the beginning of the story of some unique information. What is the story of the suicides beyond the usual tale? And a couple of indicators of note, and they're of note because we knew nothing about them locally, and we hypothesized that these would vary by mechanism. So first, let's consider the universe of suicides. And we wanted to understand, well, what percentage of the cases had positive toxicology results for ethanol? Now, sidebar comment, we are still working with our toxicologists at the examiner's office to define what constitutes a valid report. One of the challenging parts of the work with suicide is many of the suicides occur in isolation, so it may take hours, even days, for the body to be discovered. So the toxicology reports right now that we are calling valid are those that have a time of death stamped. And so we can confirm the toxicology results were proximal enough to the death that we can make sound interpretations from them. So this is a very high bar. This N is much reduced, but in this reduced N, we find that over a quarter had positive results for alcohol. In the psych history that we are so interested in learning, documentation was pretty high, and this is intuitively appealing. We found over 80% of the decedents had some indication of depression in their history. And interestingly, almost 60% of them had some documentation of receiving treatment, and that could run a gamut. Doesn't necessarily equate with medication. In addition, we learned that many of these, intuitively appealing again, are occurring in isolation, alone, no witness. Prevention is on our mind when we're investigating that. And lastly, there are over a quarter that have a note at the scene, which is actually a validation for some of the other indicators we are trying to find. If it's stated in the note that there's a psychiatric history, it confirms something we may have found elsewhere in the record. So the note becomes a critical part of our data collection as well. So given that we have a hypothesis that certain characteristics vary by mechanism, and given that we are committed to thinking hard and fast about prevention, first what we do here is set out, forget the codes I talked about a moment ago, we set out to describe the high-ranking methods of suicide, with our eye toward the ones we have some potential room to move on prevention. Remember how we saw that the second highest ranking cause of suicide was jumping from a high place? Here are how the high places distribute. It's a story of buildings and not bridges in New York City. Buildings, not bridges. Now, I want to make a comment about that. There is one bridge, and it has made national press recently, that is becoming a suicide attraction. The George Washington Bridge, the young man that jumped off the bridge about a month ago because of the video that was released about his private encounters. The reason we don't see the decedents is their bodies tend to land, given the way the Hudson River flows, in New Jersey. So they are jurisdictionally not our deaths, but they are potentially occurring on a New York City iconic bridge. And of course, the state boundary is in the middle of the bridge, so it depends a little bit on, but that's all beside the point, if you ask me. So we're coordinating a team of data folks and thinkers to figure out just how much of an attraction this is. But our data show buildings are driving that finding. In addition, the moving in front of, the jumping rather, in front of moving objects, it is suicide by subway jumps largely. Not cars, not buses, not other kinds of trains, subways. We thought that might be the case. And in addition, we focus on the forthcoming slides on the four mechanisms that are amenable to some environmental response. What could you put up to obstruct the action? That is our thinking, making it hard to execute this. Now, I have deliberately not highlighted the overdose findings because we have a whole separate branch of the health department that works on all sorts of overdose deaths, even the ones that are accidental. So I'm not just ignoring this. There's a separate part of us that's investigating that. So moving onward, let me tell you quickly how these slides are oriented. I am going to draw out for you the distinguishing features of certain methods of suicide. And I'm drawing them out in this capacity. We are comparing how they differ from the whole, what stands out about them. So regarding hanging, our highest, our first ranking method, we learn that this method is occurring, compared to the universe of suicides, more frequently among Asians and foreign-born decedents. Intuitively appealing again, many more incidents are occurring in the home when compared to the universe. And that means it pairs with the finding that they are occurring in solitude. Regarding the toxicology finding, we are finding a much higher frequency of positivity for ethanol, for alcohol, and the toxicology results compared to the universe as a whole. What does this have us thinking about, prevention-minded? Figure out and target our efforts to reduce isolations. New York City is organized by borough. This is largely a story of the borough of Queens. We can target some of our outreach, our social intervention in that borough, thinking about reducing isolation. Regarding the buildings, let me tell you, this is not a story of jumps from high buildings necessarily. We distributed the jumps across building height, and we see that's a little bit of everything. Over a quarter are jumps off of rooftops, but the rooftops aren't necessarily high buildings. And I just wanted you to also note that the building types are varied as well. So it's not just all the skyscrapers. A little bit more about the jumping findings. That said, a greater frequency of these are occurring in Manhattan when compared to the universe of suicides. A lower frequency are occurring in solitude. That is to suggest there was a witness to the event. This is fascinating, and it's sort of upside down, but bear with me. The data suggest there is a greater frequency of no depression history. Greater frequency of no depression history. This is consistent with our thinking that these are impulsive acts, not so much driven by inference, speculation, forcing us to think hard. This is not facts on the ground. Having us thinking that suicides that are more impulsive, if you could characterize this as impulsive, may not be as connected to a documented clinical story as other kinds of suicides. And the alcohol finding is interesting. There's a lower frequency of positivity for ethanol in this subgroup of decedents. What does this have us thinking about? This requires major coordination with partners in the city, environmentalists, engineers, to think hard about, well, how do you obstruct the building? How do you make it too hard to execute the jump? Well, we've got a few models. One is in play in New York. At the Empire State Building, we do have rooftop barriers there. Now, a very clever young man sadly figured out how to overcome these barriers last April 2010. But there had been no documented suicide for years and years and years at the Empire State Building. We have limited experience with these kinds of nets in the United States, but there are buildings across hotspots in Europe that have shown some success putting building netting at the to catch. So they don't prevent the jump themselves, but they prevent the severe injury consequence. And interestingly, about these nets, the literature shows that when you put a barrier up, you do not redirect the person at risk of suicide. They don't go and find another means. They just don't do the jump. Firearms, which in 2007 ranked fourth, a bit of a distinguishing story there. It's even more a story of men. The race finding is different. It is occurring more frequently among Black decedents and US-born decedents. Borough-wise, we're a city divided into five parts. There's one borough where we have a higher incidence, and then one borough where we have a lower incidence. Staten Island has more gun ownership than Manhattan. That's largely what's driving that finding. Data show, suggest, so that means there was no statistical rooting here, but the numbers are divided enough that have us thinking. There's a higher frequency of depression recorded among people who use firearms than the universe as a whole, and a higher frequency of decedents with no documented treatment. That is an interesting pairing. That is unique for firearm-related suicides. The toxicology findings show higher frequency of alcohol positivity. I see some of you taking copious notes. I am so happy to share this with you, so do not feel like you have to get every nugget down. What does this have us thinking about? Well, we're just entering the fray of the gun control dialogue in New York City and beyond, and we have our eyes on safety, safe use, harm reduction. We've got fairly tight control laws in New York City. This slide, I have to admit, is very New York-centric. It's the story of the subway deaths. In large measure, we set out to see if there was a single site or a single line. 1 year of data, very hard to know. This slide says, while at first blush, we had a couple of lines taken in most of the deaths, there's not a uniform story yet. We're looking at more data to see that. Distinguishing characteristics include Hispanic decedents dying at a higher frequency than the universe of suicides. More witnesses at the scene, but that makes sense. Public transport. No note at the scene. Very rarely found. If it's found, it's found in a backpack left on the platform. And there's also, again, a bit upside down, a higher frequency of no documented depression in decedents that are taking this impulsive step. This is similar to the jump off of a building. And lower frequency of ethanol positivity in the tox report. What does this have us thinking about? Well, this is quite an undertaking, and we've got to find the players to even begin the dialogue with on this. But there are urban centers that have set up, this is Singapore's subway system, have set it up so that you cannot jump. These doors slide closed when the train isn't in the station. They open up when the train comes in. There are also some harm reduction interventions that will put essentially it's a scooper on the front of the train, so that the jumper may very well get in the track, but the train will scoop the person up. Forgive the graphic visual there. So I finish our story with the story of the suicides and let you know that we're in the midst of going on. We are collecting more data that is essential for a couple of reasons. This is a story where you get some data, but you don't get it all. And so if you just reside with 1 year, you risk having an anomaly year. So we're collecting more data, knowing we're going to have incomplete storytelling again, but we will strengthen what we do have and hopefully solidify some of the hypotheses that, you know, we'll still commit to as hypotheses, but they'll have grounding and we'll be able to engage in policymaking around them. In terms of risk assessment, though, I want to be clear, this kind of surveillance will not answer that question, what are the risk factors for suicide? Because to do that, you need to compare those who succeed with those who don't. And this is a kind of data world where you don't get the ones that don't. The medical examiner's office has no duty to them. So we're constantly racking our brains for how to find data sources that'll help us get that comparison group. From the policy and prevention perspective that we must hold, we also understand that all our brainstorming has political costs, financial costs attached to them. The story of the Golden Gate Bridge barriers is a political story. We know when we start to talk about environmental approaches to prevention, we are entering a complex universe. So we need to do a little more homework on the costs and benefits of each approach. And at the risk of sounding even more cavalier than I have sounded before, what pursuit will yield the greatest benefit, the greatest bang for buck? Where's gonna be the way we prevent those 100 hangings, those 91 jumps? In concept, there's a way to do it if you just obstruct access. So these are other members of my team. It is a larger village, but a smaller part of us did the work here. Here's my contact information. I don't have a business card because not an element on it is correct. So it's government for you. Jot down this email, if nothing else, and I'll toss you the slides in a flash. Okay, thank you so much.